service on them that is called the file replication service. If they do happen to have file replication service, then my suggestion would be that you get in touch with me and I can help you do the sysvol migration. And as I've discussed before in the show, as of July of this year, FRS for sysvol migration or replication is no longer supported by Microsoft, so you've really got to get off of it. And I've been finding errors recently in many people's environments associated with FRS. And, you know, I mean, basically Microsoft's not doing any sort of compatibility testing anymore. So as you roll out new patches for other components of the operating system, they're not testing that anymore. Therefore, it could be that your stuff just ends up breaking one day. And if sysvol replication does not function properly, your Active Directory completely blows up. And then, well, you don't have a business anymore. So it's something to be taken very seriously, and I've done several of these recently. I've got a very well-vetted checklist for doing these processes, and it's something that I can help you do in pretty short order and be very efficient and cost-effective about it. So do reach out to me if you need to do that. So let's move on to the automatic license plate reader systems, and then we'll talk about Google Apps versus Office 365. Now, there's this fascinating article by EFF, which is the Electronic Frontier Foundation, with regards to the automatic license plate reader systems that they have been trying to deal with the security issues of, at least, and their, you know, their way of dealing with it is to audit it and expose it and to make governmental agencies and law enforcement agencies aware of the massive security holes associated with these technologies. And so that's how they've been dealing with it. And they've been doing really a phenomenal job of it. What they found was in an audit of over, they basically looked at over a couple hundred systems, and these were pole-mounted cameras that were associated with automatic license plate reader systems. Now, I think you all know that there's actually ALPR systems in, you know, mobile vehicles, the vehicles that law enforcement officers drive around. And they've typically got front-facing as well as rear-facing camera systems. Now, these camera systems are typically connected to literally a small router that is running a full data connection all the time through cellular to the internet. And the question, you know, I've always had questions about what's the security of how those have been implemented, because how are they any different from the ones that are pole mounted? So nobody's done an audit on those, at least that I can find. So the ALPR system that EFF looked at was around a company called PIPS Technology, and they had been bought out by 3M in 2011. And they have about 20,000 cameras that they deployed around the world, and EFF audited, as I said, a couple hundred of these, and what they found was an astronomically large number of them that were completely open on the internet. And it wasn't just, like, completely open for viewing. This was actually where they were completely open on the internet for configuration changes. And the ramifications of configuration changes is, let's say you happen to be a a hacker or, you know, some sort of a criminal, and you wanted this license plate reader data. It would be fairly rudimentary to actually connect to the camera in an automated way and reconfigure it to send the data feeds not just to, you know, the party where the data feed was actually originally configured to go to, but to a secondary destination. And that secondary destination could quite easily be a darknet server. And there's all kinds of horrible things that could be done with this data. Anyways, it's just really shocking, and it's a fine example of how all of you should have basically no faith at all, in my opinion, in the effectiveness of governmental agencies or in some of these cases that they audited these, they were actually owned by universities or municipalities and so forth, but ultimately these were all governmental or government-funded agencies. And you really should have no faith in these sorts of organizations keeping their stuff secure. Because what we find historically is that governmental agencies are not securing their stuff appropriately. I would much rather, I have much more faith and trust in a privately run organization, especially a technology company, because the technology companies seem to be the only ones that really take security seriously. And you can't even make that as a 100% case across the board, because lest we forget the HB Gary attack. But by and large, the as a percentage of the organizations in a particular industry, the technology companies are more so taking to a significant degree more so taking security seriously compared to organizations in other industries. And so it's just it's horrible. You know, they say, oh well, you know, this information for these automatic license plate readers is only you know, it's only accessible to the authorized parties. Well, that is complete baloney. So I am going to post the link to this article for you so that you can read it yourself, because yeah, complete baloney. So let's move on to the topic of Google Apps versus Office 365. I am astonished that this is still even a debate at any level. You know, there was this whole debate of like, well, you know, Google Gmail and Google Apps is no different than Office 365. Well, that is complete bollocks. If you look at a side-by-side comparison of a feature set, if you say that Office 365 is 100% of the functionality that you need, Gmail and Google Apps in general, including Google Docs and Talk and Hangouts and all of that, is literally only 15% of the functionality. So it's not, they're not comparable. And then some organizations will talk about how Google, how people are, their staff are only using 15% of Office anyways. And that's pretty pathetic. That's, to me, that's an absolutely pathetic excuse for neutering the functionality of your business by using Google Apps. And then I hear from schools where they say, well, you know, we're really big into Google education. Well, that's fine. And, you know, they say, well, we get it for free. Yeah, you as a school get Office 365 for free too. Yeah. So, you know, cost is not part of the debate. For that matter, if you're looking at a side-by-side cost between Google Apps, which including Gmail versus Office 365, the equivalency of the E1 licensing is literally what Google Apps has. And that is $5 per month per user for a regular organization. So again, I'm looking at it from a perspective of, you know, if you want to be honest about it side by side, there's no price difference between the two. What it is if you actually choose to utilize more functionality with Office 365, yes, sure, it's going to cost you more, but that's only if you are choosing to utilize things like Skype for Business to with the Enhanced Advanced package, you know, or if you're doing Enhanced SharePoint. But even just at a base level with E1 licensing where there is no cost difference, I would argue extensively that Office 365 is incredibly much more powerful and sustainable for an organization than Google Apps and Gmail. So, as some examples, Google Apps does not give you any PowerShell access into backend administration for things like administrative transitionary functionality. People that had Exchange servers and where you're an organization, whether you're a school or you're a business of some sort or your governmental agency, whatever it is, if you had an Exchange server and your IT staff has been used to the granular security controls and things like delegated administration and shared calendaring, shared mailboxes, resource mailboxes, and you just can't do a lot of these things with Gmail and Google Apps. So as one example, everybody seems to want to do shared calendaring. Now, with Office 365, from a policy basis, you can set up teams of people, and you can specify a default set of calendar sharing based upon your team, and this is a lot of it's tied into your Active Directory hierarchy in the positions that you're specifying that people have inside of Active Directory. So let's say you're a manager and you have a team of 9 people that report to you. Well, Active Directory keeps track of that, and then all of that by policy can be translated just on a completely automated basis into shared calendaring. So what happens is as you add and remove team members, or even as your team members move around, maybe you lose somebody from your team because they transfer to a different department. Simple changes from an administrative perspective, which are fully automated and have nothing to do with a reliance upon an end user to do something, these business enhancing collaboration processes are just fully automated based upon the back-end functionality that you used to have in Exchange, and of course then you still have in Office 365. So then you have all of the amazing functionality between Azure and integrated SSO authentication that you can do with Office 365 and AD Connect. You can't do any of that with Google Apps. Yes, there is an Active Directory synchronization thing with Google Apps, but it's really just not quite the same thing. It doesn't have the same level of functionality as what AD Connect has. Something that is used almost, I mean, I would say it's almost ubiquitous everywhere, is policy-based email signatures. Maybe you are using a piece of software like Xclaimer and Xink. So in those circumstances, as an organization, you might have a security policy or a legal policy that says that you have to have an email disclaimer. Well, do you want to do just something basic, like a standard email disclaimer on absolutely everybody's signature, or would you rather have one that is pulling a little photograph of the person from the Active Directory stored photograph, as well as their title, as it appears in Active Directory, and any other contact information that you've specified in Active Directory? Well, with a product like Xclaimer and Xink that does full integration with Office 365, you can have a uniquely customized and mandated signature delivered for each individual person into their Outlook client. And all that can be done automatically. So, again, if you're running an organization, whether it's a school or a business or whatever, if you're running an organization and you're trying to have legal compliance or compliance with security policies, or just this is how we want to do things as an organization sort of policies, you need to have bucket loads of automation and integrity enforcement. And I haven't seen how that's possible to do with Google Apps. I was recently talking to somebody who was telling me that they did experimentation with Gmail and calendars. And I'm talking this was not just shared calendars with like personal Gmail accounts. No, this was an organization that had Gmail and Google Apps for their organization. And they were not able to do, from an administrative perspective, they were not able to do this policy-based shared calendaring. And so each time a person joined the organization, that person was literally going to have to go in, and if they wanted to have shared calendaring collaboration with other people, then they would have to go in and manually delegate out access to their calendar to all these individuals. With Active Directory, you can actually create distribution groups, which are like distribution lists in email. You can create those based upon automated rule sets. And so what happens is, if you put this level of automation in place, again, as somebody joins a team, or they move teams, they leave the organization, or they join the organization, as the very small administrative overhead of managing how people are populated in Active Directory, the very small overhead of how that's handled turns into all of this other automation. And when we consider the fact that 97% of breaches are occurring due to some misconfiguration, then we need to acknowledge that your best way of dealing with the avoidance of a misconfiguration is to take the time and effort to put in the policies and then verify that they do what you expect them to do with regards to this automated enforcement of the results that you're looking for. And then, I'm not saying you shouldn't do maybe an annual audit of that, saying, well, yeah, is this still working as we expect it to? But you're not exposing yourself. I mean, first of all, you're reducing administrative overhead, which just makes your organization more cost effective, just flat out. But you're also not exposing yourself to, oh, crud, well, we had this business problem that cost us money, or cost us outage, or cost us customers, or whatever it is, because we had a mistake that was made by an individual because the automation wasn't in place. So these are things to be avoided. Now, Google Docs, let's talk about Google Docs. We've talked about the calendaring, which it really means that it's not really that much of a collaboration tool. I don't even think you can have resource mailboxes with resource calendars in Google calendaring, but I could be wrong on that, but I've never seen where that's able to be done. Google Docs ends up being more like Dropbox, as a file repository that's really geared towards the individual. It's not really team or project based, at least to the extent of SharePoint with Office 365. So if you're an organization here, a huge percentage of this has to do with, what has your organization been doing this whole time? Are you going to take your locally installed Microsoft Office and light it on fire? If you're not, then what's the purpose of Google Docs? Are you going to start using like Google Worksheets, where it's all online and then you've got neutered functionality? Because Google Worksheets does not even remotely come close to doing the capabilities of what Excel does. So why would you have staff utilize two completely disconnected spreadsheet platforms? If you have somebody who's developing a pivot table based reporting thing for your organization, and you've got to do those pivot tables in real Excel, if they were to put that in SharePoint or in OneDrive for your organization, then all of that's actually viewable with Excel Online, which is part of Office 365. On the other hand, if you took that same spreadsheet and you put it into a Google Docs for and then viewed it through that mechanism with Google, with the Google Sheets application, you're going to lose all that pivot table functionality, especially if there's like back-end ODBC connections, any of those sorts of things. You just lose a bunch of the functionality. One of the things that drives me up a wall with Google Docs is there's no styles. I've literally had situations where there were people who wanted me to collaborate with them on extensive documentation for a project. And as a professionally trained technical writer, I am going to be using styles. And styles is nothing new. And styles is nothing exclusive to Microsoft Word. Styles, my recollection of the original implementation of styles was literally in like WordPerfect version 5, which is, I'm telling you, serious ancient times ago, like 1993 ancient times ago. WordPerfect, when it wasn't even GUI mode, when it was a blue text background, had styles. Yeah, no kidding. So styles is nothing new. Therefore, it's an industry standard. You can use styles in Publisher. You use styles inside of Adobe products. Styles is a it's a universal capability of being able to ensure that documentation that you're creating, whether it's a PowerPoint file or a Publisher file or a Word document or a WordPerfect document, whatever it happens to be, it's even inside of OpenOffice. I think it's a Libre OpenOffice, the document editing platform that's there, that also uses styles. So because it's this industry standard functionality, you expect it to actually work. Except if I'm relying upon being able to create professional, consistent looking documentation inside of Google Docs, I can't do it. There's no styles. If you take a Microsoft Word document that has all the styles in there and you put it into Google Docs and then you start editing it, any of the edits strip the styles right out. So you're losing all of this document automation and functionality that we've all come to rely upon so heavily. I'm not saying that it doesn't have some use for people who are doing documents that are just completely microscopic little things, maybe one or two page things. If that's what you're doing and you have no skill with styles, you have no skill with any even moderate enhanced functionality inside of Microsoft Office, then maybe Google Docs is okay. But I have yet to see an organization that is that short in their functionality usage of Microsoft Office. So I would highly suggest that people stop thinking about Google Docs in this element of the indoctrination that I think really has been propagated, especially in the educational industry. It's, Google Docs and Gmail and all this. They're told that all this collaboration is available, and frankly, it really reminds me a lot of the marketing that Apple has done over the years with regards to telling people that, Apple products are so much better. I mean, it's the same sort of baloney of Apple products don't get viruses or Apple doesn't get malware. Yet if you do a simple Google search, you can find out that, yeah, there's massive quantities of Apple-based viruses, viruses and malware and so forth that go after. They're specifically targeted for iOS and Apple operating systems like OS X. So, if you're going to be looking at what to do with the email platform for your organization, it's you really need to get deep into it and get past the marketing information. If I was you, and you're like an IT person or you're a decision maker in your organization, I would do a side-by-side comparison. Literally, get a document and write down all of the functionality that your organization relies upon, and then what you want to do in terms of this is how we're going to take the functionality that we have today and implement it in this new platform. And then you've got to ask the question, is it even possible to implement it in that new platform? If it is, are you losing some level of functionality? Are you gaining functionality? I mean, organizations that go from Exchange on-premise to Office 365 are actually gaining a lot more functionality than what they previously had. So what you can't be doing is taking a reverse backwards step from your on-premise functionality. And my very strong perception after having done two Google Apps implementations and probably about 30 Office 365 implementations is that there is really no comparison. I mean, there's just no comparison. It's not a price issue. It's not a cost differential issue from the monthly cost sort of thing. You can actually pay for either one of those services on an annual basis if you so choose to. But where the real comparative analysis comes from is what is the functionality to the staff of this organization? And how does that translate to either lost productivity or gained productivity? How does this solution enhance the security of our organization, or how does the solution diminish the security of the organization? These are all questions that you have to ask yourself. And there's some pretty good articles on this topic from some people who are also very experienced in this. In case you're thinking, ah, that's just Felicia's, opinion, I would say no, that is not just my opinion. If you want to take a look at those articles, and this is just a couple that I found. There's a whole bucket load more out there on this topic, of course, but just a couple really nice salient articles I found that I think would be right on point for you if you needed to try to help somebody else understand that Google is not the panacea that people think it is. I've got those posted, and I'm going to post those with this particular show. So hopefully you enjoyed it, and as always, do send me your feedback and comments to breakfastbites@gmail.com. And yes, I am using Gmail for the Breakfast Bites show. It is true. All right, you all have a good weekend.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. As a resident of Kenosha, I frequently drive past our downtown area known as the Civic Center Historic District. This is the area on Sheridan Road that features the post office to the east, the Dinosaur Discovery Museum to the west, the county courthouse to the north, and what was originally called Kenosha High School on the south, which is now known as Reuther High School.